Good evening. Glad to stand in front of you this evening. I don't know about you, I've had a great day. Been some wonderful weather. We've already been able to be here and to worship God once, have a wonderful service, and now we get to do it again. I do want to say before I begin that I do want to give my wife some credit. I don't know how many of y'all knew this, but horse manure is extremely flammable. I had no idea until today. I had lit a brush fire out back right beside my herb garden, which is, of course, fertilized with horse manure, and I caught the entire garden on fire. And so somehow my wife managed to put out a smoldering herb garden in her Sunday dress and get a whole gaggle of kids ready for church and get here on time at the same, all in one epic action. And I don't know how she did it, but I appreciate that. But anyway, so it's been a good day, but it's also been a little bit of a adventurous day. You might take out your Bibles and you might turn to Luke chapter 9. And Luke chapter 9 is where we're going to begin most of our study this evening. Luke chapter 9. If you remember last Sunday we talked about, last month, we talked about learning to conquer ourselves. And we said that one of Peter's main problems was that he kind of couldn't get out of his own way. He never really could realize exactly, or at least at first couldn't realize exactly what he was truly capable of through Christ. And sometimes that's our problem as well. Tonight we're going to continue that same kind of vein of thought. And we're going to talk about learning to deny yourself. And an interesting story, a story that's probably familiar to all of us. In Luke chapter 9, in verses 18 through 20, is where I want us to begin. We have a familiar exchange. It says, "And it happened while he was praying alone," this is talking about Jesus, "the disciples were with him, and he questioned them, saying, 'Who do people say that I am?' And they answered, and they said, 'John the Baptist,' and others said Elijah, but others, one of the prophets that has risen again. And he said to them," talking to his apostles or his disciples, "'Who do you say that I am?' And Peter answered and said, 'The Christ of God.'" Well, Peter is the first person here to raise his hand at the head of the class again and to speak up and say, "The Christ of God." And we skip down to verse 23 in this same chapter, we find another interesting exchange, and it's this response that Jesus has to that earlier exchange that I want us to focus on for the remainder of our study. In verse 23 and 24, "And he was saying to all of them," Jesus once again, "'If anyone wishes to come after me, he must deny himself, take up his cross daily, and follow me.'" Deny himself, take up his cross daily, and follow me. "For whoever wishes to save his life will lose it, but whoever loses his life for my sake, he is the one who will save it." In Mark, Mark tells us of that exact same exchange, almost verbatim, but he says at the very onset of that of this passage, "And he summoned a crowd with his disciples and said to them," he summoned a crowd. I take that to mean that here Jesus has something very important to say, something that's worthy of a crowd to hear. And so he calls a crowd together. And then what does he say to them? He says, "If anyone wishes to come after me, he must deny himself, take up his cross daily, and follow me." In fact, I would suggest to you that that is such an important passage that it's echoed in three out of the four Gospels. In Mark chapter 8 and verse 34, we just read, in Luke chapter 9 and verse 23, and also in Matthew chapter 16 and verse 24. "If anyone wishes to come after me, he must deny himself, take up his cross daily, and follow me." Now that's a verse we're probably all familiar with. We've probably memorized it at one point in time in our lives. We've probably taught that verse to our kids in Sunday school and put it on the walls as memory verses. We've probably highlighted it in our Bibles. But do we know what it means? Do we know what Jesus is saying? I want to suggest to you that a lot of times we teach this verse and we teach it a little wrong. Well, I'm not sure that we teach exactly what this verse means sometimes. And I'm not going to say all the time, but I'm going to say sometimes. In fact, I have heard several sermons on this verse, and I'm not sure that that's what it means. We oftentimes look at this verse and we talk about the fact, well, we've all got our crosses to bear. We've got this burden that we've got to bear in life. We've got this a cross, and well, the Christian life is hard and the Christian life is tough, and man, we all got crosses. What's your cross? What's the cross that you have to bear? I heard a preacher one time preaching on this, and he was standing up, getting into a sermon, and he's doing his arms out like this. We all got our crosses to bear. For some of us, you know, we have this as a cross, and we have to bear it. And he says, and I didn't say this because my mother-in-law's not here, but he says, for some of us, our cross might be our mother-in-law. And I don't think our cross is our mother-in-law. In 2002, Mel Gibson came out with a movie. He produced a movie called The Passion of the Christ. And this movie focuses on the events surrounding Christ's crucifixion, His walk up to up the hill of Calvary, and His trial, His accusations, His false accusers. It focuses all about that, and His scourging, everything that has to do with that, those hours before His crucifixion. In one of those scenes in that movie, the actor portraying Jesus is carrying his cross up the hill towards Calvary, and he's bearing that cross, and he's struggling beneath his weight, and he's bent double, and he falls. He begins to fall, and as he begins to fall, the actress that's portraying Mary takes off running from the crowd, and she runs over there as if to catch her son. And as she's running, it's a moving moment in the film, because as she's running, her mind flashes back to a time when he was young, when he was a boy, and he's running down the sidewalk, and he falls, and he skins his knee, and she runs to him to catch him and to pick him up and to make his knee better. And then her mind flashes back to the present time, and she's running to catch her son. Her son, who is now fallen beneath the weight of a cross and who is about to be put to death. And it kind of drives home the point of that phrase, if anyone wishes to come after me, let him, what, deny himself, take up his cross daily, and follow me. I want to suggest to you that oftentimes we complicate that phrase, we complicate that verse. And we do so because if we truly look at what it's talking about and what it means and what it entails for each and every one of us, then it becomes a little bit uncomfortable. It becomes a little bit, you know, makes us a little uneasy to truly realize the true meaning, to truly focus in on that and understand what it's talking about. To do that, let's take our minds back. Let's take our minds back to the time when Jesus uttered those words, to the time when Jesus says, if any man wants to come after me, let him deny himself, take up his cross daily, and follow me. Take our minds back to that. What was a cross during that day? What did that phrase mean? Let him take up his cross. During that time, I want to suggest to you that the cross was not the symbol of Christianity that it is today. I want to suggest to you that the cross was not an aspiration to live to or merely a burden to bear. But during the time when Jesus uttered that phrase, if anyone will come after me, let him deny himself, take up his cross, and follow me, the cross was used for one purpose and one purpose alone. During the time Jesus spoke those words, the cross was, before it was anything else, an instrument of execution and an instrument of death. The cross wasn't a burden. Well, it was a burden to those that carry it, but that's not all it was. The cross, first and foremost, was an instrument of death. So, is Jesus saying here that we've got to put ourselves to death? I don't think that. Before the cross was a burden, the cross was an instrument of death. It wasn't a pair of earrings. It wasn't a pair of jewelry. It wasn't a pendant. It wasn't a cross. It wasn't a leather emblem to be hung on our saddles. Now, I want to be clear. I'm not saying any of those things are wrong. Not getting up here and preaching against any of that. But I'm saying that's not what the cross was when Jesus says, if anyone wishes to come after me, let him deny himself, take up his cross, and follow me. The cross was not a stained glass window that we put in our church and that we adore and that we create in this beautiful, magnificent, multicolored sunlight refracts through. The cross at the time Jesus said those words, the cross was not a gold emblem that we place on top of a staff or a sign that we make with our hands or a monument that we erect in enormous proportions beside the highway to wonder at and be amazed by. At the time that Jesus said those words, if anyone wishes to come after me, let him deny himself, take up his cross daily and follow me. The cross was an instrument of death. Peter explains it like this, or rather, I'm sorry, Paul explains it like this in Romans chapter 6 and verses 1 through 4. What shall we say then? Are we to continue in sin so that grace may increase? May it never be. Now listen to the wording. Listen to the structure of the sentences here that Paul puts together for these Christians at Rome. How shall we who died to sin still live in it? Or do you not know that all of us who have been baptized into Christ Jesus have been baptized into His death? Therefore we have been buried with Him through baptism into death, so that as Christ was raised from the dead through the glory of the Father, so we too might walk in newness of life. Boy, he could turn a phrase, couldn't he? In Romans chapter 6, just a few verses down, in verses 6 through 7, he writes this, knowing this, that our old self was crucified with Him, in order that our body of sin might be done away with, so that we would no longer be slaves to sin. For he who has died is what? Is freed from sin. If anyone wishes to come after me, let him deny himself. Let him take up his cross and let him follow me. Take up your cross for what? If you lived in Jerusalem during this day, you would have seen a hill outside the city that looked like this. This is a modern-day picture of what many archaeologists believe is the Hill of Calvary. And while there's no way to know for sure just which hill was indeed the hill that Christ was crucified in, most historians, most archaeologists believe that it was this one. We sing a song in our books, I Believe in a Hill Called Mount Calvary. I believe whatever the cost, when time is surrendered and earth is no more, I'll still cling to that old rugged cross. If you lived in Jerusalem during the time that Jesus uttered those words, and you looked outside your window and you saw the switchbacks coming up to the top of this hill, then one thing that was a frequent sight for you was to see criminals, see people that were carrying crosses up that hill. Those people would put those crosses on their shoulder, or perhaps they'd carry the crossbeam. We don't know a lot, some of the details, but they would put crosses on their shoulder. They would walk up this hill, and then at the top, guess what would happen? Guess what you never saw if you were in Jerusalem during that time? You might have saw a criminal walking up that hill with his cross, but you never once saw that same criminal walking back down. Because the cross during the time of Jesus was for one purpose and one purpose alone. The cross during the time of Jesus was an instrument of execution, an instrument of death, an instrument to put to death an old man. In Luke chapter 23 and verses 23 through 26, we read an account of Jesus carrying his cross up the hill of Calvary. It says, but they were insistent, talking about the crowd, with loud voices asking that he be crucified. And their voices began to prevail, and Pilate pronounced sentence that their demand be granted. He released the man that they were asking for, whom had been thrown into prison for insurrection and for murder. But he delivered Jesus to their will. When they led him away, they seized a man, Simon of Cyrene, coming in from the country, and they placed on him the cross to carry behind Jesus. We've read that, and we've studied that before, but have you ever thought about the fact that Jesus, to the top, he really didn't bear his own cross all the way to the top there? Simon of Cyrene bore it at least part of the way. You know, another thing within that, we're told, we're oftentimes believe and we think about the fact that Jesus fell. We sing, the cross became so heavy he fell beneath the load. We're never told in the Scripture that Jesus fell beneath his cross. It does seem to imply that he struggled with it. From the very fact that Simon of Cyrene was employed to carry it that last part of the way. But we put a lot of, I guess, human emphasis on the carrying of that cross and the burden of that cross. But really, when we look at the Bible, when we look at the Scripture, they don't place that much emphasis on who carried the cross. They place a whole lot of emphasis on who was nailed to it, though. In fact, I want to suggest to you tonight that really, it didn't matter. Didn't matter who carried the cross up the hill of Calvary, but what did matter and what does matter to us today and what will matter for as long as this earth stands is who was nailed on that cross. Isaiah chapter 53 and verses 4 through 6. Surely our griefs he himself bore, and our sorrows he carried. Yet we ourselves esteemed him stricken, smitten of God, and afflicted. But he was pierced through for our transgressions. He was crushed for our iniquities. The chastising of our well-being fell upon him. And by his scourging, we are healed. All of us like sheep have gone astray. Each of us has turned to his own way. But the Lord has caused the iniquity of us all to fall upon him. Didn't matter who carried the cross. It mattered who was nailed to it. And today it matters who we nailed to that cross. In Colossians chapter 3 and verses 5 through 11, therefore consider the members of your earthly body as dead to immorality. Crucify them. Impurity, passion, evil desire, and greed, which amounts to idolatry. For it is because of these things that the wrath of God will come upon the sons of disobedience. And in them you also once walked when you were living in them. But now you also put them all aside. Anger, wrath, malice, slander, and abusive speech from your mouth. Do not lie to one another. Since you laid aside the old self with its evil practices and have put on the new self, who is being renewed to a true knowledge according to the image of the one who created him, a renewal in which there is no distinction between Greek or Jew, circumcised, uncircumcised, barbarian, Scythian, slave, and free man, but Christ is in all and in all. It matters who we nail to that cross today. In Ephesians chapter 4 and verses 22 through 24, that in reference to your former manner of life, you lay aside the old self, which is being corrupted in accordance with the lust of deceit. That you be renewed in the spirit of your mind and put on the new self, which in the likeness of God has been created in righteousness and holiness of the truth. That you put aside, you lay aside the old self. And that you what? That you be renewed. Be renewed in the spirit of your mind and put on the new self. If any man wishes to come after me, let him deny himself, take up his cross, and follow me. Why do we take a cross up? You take that cross up to put to death who you were before you came to Christ. Before you're buried beneath those waters of baptism. Before you rise a new creation, cleansed in His blood. Cross is an instrument of death before it was any of the things we've turned it into today. Its sole purpose was execution. The very word excruciating, excruciating, the root, the Latin root of that word excruciating means out of the cross. The cross was a curse. This picture here on the board, that's actually a creek in Limestone County, Alabama. And I'll give you all bonus points if anybody can guess what creek that is. If you drive over here down Highway 99 and you go across a few bridges and you turn there on Chapman Hollow Road, you're going to find this creek off to your left. This is Big Creek. And it was on this creek years ago where my grandfather was baptized, where he was washed, where he was put to death, and where he rose. A new person. I say that to say this, that that's incumbent on each and every one of us. Beneath those waters of baptism, we leave the old person below. And we rise new. I don't know how many of you watched the royal wedding. I didn't watch much of it. Molly watched some, and as she was watching, I was walking through the bedroom, and I happened to see this man preaching his sermon. His name's Michael Curry. I don't know anything about his doctrinal stance. I'm not making a judgment on this man at all. No idea what he preaches or what he believes really that much. I just heard one little excerpt, and it caught my ear, and I thought, man, that's right on. And there, as he was preaching this royal wedding, he said this. He didn't die for anything, talking about Jesus. He didn't die for anything he could get out of. Jesus did not get an honorary doctorate out of it. He wasn't getting anything out of it. He died, he did it for others, for the other, for the good and well-being of others. That's what love is. That's what love is. Love is not selfish and it's not self-centered. Love can be sacrificial and in so doing becomes redemptive. And that way of unselfish, sacrificial, redemptive love can change lives and it can change the world. Like I said, I don't know a thing about this man, but I know that that phrase right there I think is spot on. That way of unselfish, sacrificial, and redemptive love can change lives and it can change the world. And I'm here to tell you that it's changed my life. In Romans chapter 5 and verses 6 through 8, Paul writes this to the Romans. He says, he puts it like this, "For while we were still helpless, at the right time Christ died for the ungodly. For one will hardly die for a righteous man, though perhaps for the good man some would even dare to die. But God demonstrates His own love toward us in that while we were yet sinners, Christ died for us." Sacrificial, redemptive love. We sing a song in our books called Amazing Grace. Amazing Grace, but why is grace amazing? The very first words of that song beg a answer to that question. Amazing Grace. What is amazing about grace? I want to suggest to you that grace is amazing because it's sacrificial, because it's redemptive. Because it's powerful. Amazing grace, how sweet the sound that saved a wretch like me. I once was lost, but now I'm found. I was blind, but now I see. 'Twas grace that taught my heart to fear, and grace my fears relieved. How precious did that grace appear the hour that I first believed. All through many dangers and toils and tears, I have already come. It was grace that brought me safe thus far, and it's grace that will lead me on. When we've been there 10,000 years, bright shining as the sun, we've no less days to sing God's praise than when we first begun. Jesus says, if anyone wishes to come after me, let him deny himself, take up his cross daily, and follow me. Very last point I want to make, and the lesson is yours, and that is, what does that mean to daily take up our cross? Take up your cross daily? That means that it's an ongoing process, that we have to put to death that old man every day. Every day. And we have to make our mind up every day that His grace is amazing. His grace is powerful. His grace is redemptive. His grace is sacrificial. And it is through a cursed tree, a cursed object, the cross, an instrument of execution, that we come in contact with that grace. If you're here tonight and you're not a Christian, then we want to implore you, we want to ask you to come after Jesus. Deny yourself now. Deny yourself. We're about to sing our invitation song, Take Up Your Cross, as we do and follow Him. If you're here tonight and you've wandered away, then renew that new self. Put to death that old self once again. Deny yourself. Take up your cross daily and follow Him. Won't you come while together we sing Amazing Grace.